The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting, management, or its sponsors.
Healthy Lifestyle with Lorianne is brought to you by Northwell Health. Visit them online at northwell.edu. Welcome to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lorianne Kasdia. Our goal here at Healthy Lifestyle is to inspire, educate, and empower you to fulfill a healthy emotional, spiritual, and physical life so you can feel empowered to live the life you have always wanted and dreamed. Today on our show is, Nicholas James Kasdia. He is a certified sommelier and also happens to be my son. How are you? Welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, really. So you are a certified sommelier. What does that mean?
I am. So certified sommelier, it's part of a distinction that you get by taking several tests. So you start off with an intro through the Court of Master Somms, and basically certified is the second level. You work your way eventually to master, and this certification basically just shows that you have the general base knowledge to teach people about wine and help people pick out wines in restaurants or on a personal basis. It's come in handy also.
Well, so, and that's why we call you the wine guy.
The wine guy,
yeah. The wine guy. So how did you get involved in that? What started you doing that?
When I was little, I mean, you should know this.
Yeah, I was there. They weren't.
Yeah, you were there. we used to have a little bit of wine with dinner when I was a little kid, and like it would be watered down, but it kind of always gave me a idea of kind of what the adults were doing, and it was fun, and it's something that I tasted and just enjoyed the flavor from a young age, which I guess is kind of strange now to think about.
No, you used to ask for it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And we're like, okay, we expected the pickle face, you know, where you squish your face up.
Yeah.
And you liked it, which was a little alarming.
Yeah, well, yeah. Here we are 24 years later. But no, yeah, it's just kind of sparked my interest there. And then I started cooking because I was always in the kitchen. And it just kind of took away and took off, you know?
Yeah, you used to drag anything that you could stand on in the kitchen over so you could reach the counter so you could cook and do stuff and figure out and ask a gazillion questions. So that was really cool. But that kind of led you into finding a program when you were in high school, right? Associated with the school districts, which I absolutely adore, which is BOCES, right?
Yeah. So I went to BOCES for the 2 years.
While you were going to high school.
Yeah, while I was going to high school.
So how does that work?
Yeah. So in the morning, I would take a different bus. So I'd get on the bus from my house. They'd bring us to BOCES. So we'd stay there for about half the day, about half the school day, get bused back to school, and then you go back for your course. So like your English, maths, etc. at your normal school. The BOCES program is great because it's a 2-year program. You start in about your junior year.
For culinary, right?
For culinary, yeah.
Because at the time, didn't you want to be a chef?
I did. So I started working in kitchens when I was 14.
Yeah.
Cutting onions for hours.
Oh my gosh, that was great. You did a
An internship,
Over at Porter's on the Lane.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
The first day they had me just cutting onions, and I just diced onions for hours. And, you know, that task itself was boring, but it grew into just showing me everything else because you need your basics before you can move on. You know?
Oh my gosh. I thought for sure when you came out, first of all, the smell came out of the restaurant before you did.
Yeah,
when I picked you up.
It was terrible.
It was really very funny, but you loved it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was something about it, the energy in the kitchen.
Yeah, it was the energy in the kitchen. It was the people who were there who were passionate about it and kind of reinforced the idea of the passion that I had behind it. And that kind of stuff really pushed me to the next level to then go to culinary school.
Which you went to?
Johnston Wales University.
Up in Providence.
Yeah, and you know what? The BOCES actually ended up helping greatly because little that I know is that you transferred credits from BOCES to Johnson and Wales. So I graduated instead of doing I did a 4-year program, but instead of doing it in 4 years, I did it in about 3 because of this program. And it just accelerated it so quickly that it was incredible.
And they taught you how to do use your knives, right?
Yeah, just kind of the fundamentals, the basics. The first year, you basically learn how to use a knife, and you learn heat control, or you learn how to break down a chicken or a fish, and so you're working with these proteins, and you're cooking with things you may not see at home. And then you also learn how to bake, which is great, so you get the fundamentals of making bread or making cookies, so... Baking was never great for me, but the cooking part was always amazing. So flash forward, went to Johnson & Wales. I fell in love with cooking. Yeah.
And then you somewhere along the line there transferred over into hospitality?
I did. So when I was in my sophomore year of college, we had to do an internship. So that's a great thing about Johnson & Wales, or J-Woo as we call it.
J-Woo?
J-Woo. Yeah, so it's a great thing about Johnson & Wales is they make you do internships and they make you. It's a requirement.
Definition of make you.
Yeah, exactly.
So where did you do your first internship, as if I didn't know?
Well, yeah. I did it at Attica, which is not the prison.
Not the prison, yeah. Yes. Thank you
so
for
Attica
pointing
is
that.
A...
That was an alarming call, I have to tell you.
Yeah, I could imagine
yeah.
so. Yeah.
Good. So Attica?
So Attica was a three-hat, well, it still is, a three-hat restaurant. So in Australia, they have kind of a different ranking system than the rest of the world. Most of us go by Michelin Guide, but... Unfortunately, Michelin Guide hasn't gotten there yet because, you know, Australia is kind of in the middle of nowhere.
24 hours in a can.
Yeah, 24 hours in a can. We've done that.
Yeah, on the plane.
And yeah, so I literally started looking at the world's top 50 list. San Pellegrino has a sponsorship where they basically go and eat at the best restaurants in the world and discover this. And I went to Attica. I loved every second of it. It was a very great experience. The head chef, Ben Shuri, is one of the kindest chefs I've ever met in my
Isn't
life.
Isn't he on the show Somm? Didn't they do a segment on him?
No, he's not on Somm. He's on Netflix documentary Chef's Table. He's actually the third or fourth episode. I don't remember quite
which
one.
Very passionate individual.
Very passionate, very kind, wonderful family. But I started in the kitchen there, and when I was there about 2 months in, I kind of saw front of house, and we got a taste of it because we had to go as chefs or interns go out there and serve a portion of honey onto this beautiful house-made cheese. And it was one of the courses, and it was really cool just like taking fresh honeycomb and putting it on top. And I really liked being out there. I liked interacting with the guests, and it just kind of clicked. And I noticed a little bit of a...
shift, maybe?
A shift in, like, more of life standard, to be completely honest. Because working in kitchens, it really kicks your butt. Yeah. And getting into front of house, it's kind of better hours. And on top of that, it's just you get to interact with these people who you would have never met in your life if you didn't try, you know?
Yeah. I find that interesting about hospitality because it is exhausting in the hours. It's weekends, it's nights, it's holidays.
Yeah.
And y'all still have smiles on your faces and... You go out there and you're serving other people. What part, you know, you love that part?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely wild. It's crazy. And you have nights where you, like, you hate people and they're terrible. They're the worst. But those nights are vastly overtaken by the good and by how kind people are and how just, like, what your impact can do to their experience tableside and, like, just having... You as a person make or break the night that
yeah, they've had. Good server makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I've had people who have proposed while I've been serving on them, and like I had to plan these like elaborate like proposals in restaurants that I've worked in, and it's just like really cool to be working with these guests and having their dreams realized of this beautiful occasion and this beautiful moment.
And being a portion of that, right?
Yeah, we're part of people's lives, whether we like it or not. This is what we do. And like when you work in some restaurants, it's substantial to people and they come there every day and it's part of their lives. And you really, really are there for most of it. And like we had this one regular at the Modern, which was my first restaurant out of college that I worked in.
That's a Michelin restaurant in New York City.
Yeah, it's a two Michelin star restaurant in New York City. I was serving at the time there, and Mr. Cartoon was one of our guests, and he was this older gentleman, and he was the kindest man. He'd come in every day around 5 or 6 o'clock. He'd always have pistachios, and if he didn't bring the unshelled, unsalted pistachios with them, we'd have to go get some for him, and just not have to, but want to, because right. we know he likes it. And just kind of preparing, and you get to know these people that I could tell you his exact routine of how he'll dine to this day. And right. that was 4 years ago that I worked at the Modern.
Yeah.
So wow. you really have a lasting impact to it.
Yeah, that's great. An impact in both directions, an impact on you and an impact on them.
Absolutely.
So, yeah,
a lot of empathy.
You've spoken a lot about that. And then, so how did you like Australia?
I loved Australia. It was, yeah. it was a beautiful, beautiful place. If you ever get the chance and...
Great coffee.
Yeah, it's great coffee, great wine, great people. Like, the people are so kind, warm, and welcoming. And the only downside is a 24-hour flight.
Yeah,
that's it.
That was a little rough.
Their wine's phenomenal. But back to the Attica story, which I didn't quite finish. I made the switch there, and I also fell in love with wine because these amazing sommeliers were teaching me and showing me the path. And it sparked from there. So the finish of Johnson & Wales, I ended up going into the beverage program.
And they have a program where you do wine tasting as one of the...
classes, yeah.
Classes.
Yeah, so we're actually allowed to taste, in Rhode Island, it was up to, I believe, 2 ounces mm-hmm. of wine.
Yep.
Even if you're underage, because they had a certain deal with everything. But it's a really, really cool program if you want to get into wine and that kind of stuff.
And then you did a second internship over in Germany, right?
Yeah,
and that was not just Germany. You went to France.
So, yeah, it was a bus trip through France. So Germany, we stayed there. We had classes every day from 9 a.m. to 5 o'clock, just really intensive, like teaching about all the wine regions in the world. And then we'd take field trips each day, actually, to different vineyards.
What's the benefit of going to all these different vineyards?
So the benefit of going to these vineyards is actually quite substantial, because when you're talking about wine, you're talking about something that we call terroir. Terroir is basically the essence of a place. So it's the soil type, it's the water, the rainfall, the slope of the hilltops that they're planting these vines on, because wine plants need to struggle to create great fruit, right? And by having these climates and conditions, the wine comes out completely different all over the world.
It's similar to chocolate too. Wherever it grows, it gets those different note tastes.
Yeah,
right?
In a similar way. Yeah, the way it's handled, the way from the day it's grown to the day it's crushed and then fermented, it all has an impact. And then going to these vineyard sites and learning about this specific producer, like let's say Ratzenberger. It's my favorite vineyard in Germany. It was the first one we went to. What was that?
Is that a Zinfandel?
No, it's a Riesling.
Riesling. Oh, I'm Riesling. Sorry. Yeah, I always get those confused.
Yeah, so he makes Riesling Müller Thurgaus, which is a lesser known grape, but it's phenomenal as well. But going there and seeing that the slope is so steep that they actually have wire cables that you need to hold on to get up the hill.
Almost like a rock climber.
Yeah, they hook in because it's steep, it's dangerous, and like they hand pick and hand harvest these grapes.
Wow.
And these aren't things you'd know unless you've been to the vineyard and seen like where in relation to the river it is, and why that the grapes at the top of the hill might be better than the grapes at the bottom, and seeing the correlation there really really opens up like your mind to understanding why the terroir makes such a difference.
And you get a real good respect for the wine and the process, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the people involved, and like they dedicate their lives, and making wine, well, may seem glamorous, it's a very tightly margined thing, and like these people work their lives off to create these products that that are just phenomenal.
Yeah, it really is amazing. So you went to Germany, you were doing that. You got a certification there, right?
So I from the German Wine Institute in Koblenz, I got a German wine certificate or diploma with
distinction.
With distinction, yeah. And it was actually it was really cool. You know, I met some lifelong friends there, and it was just a great experience to be a part of.
Yeah, I like that you've been traveling all over the place, and you have friends in Australia, and you have friends that you met in Australia that were from different parts of the country.
Yeah,
or the world, I should say. And it's really exciting to see how you're still in connection with them.
Yeah.
By virtue of social media, right?
social media is a, definitely a big thing in our industry. It not only keeps you connected, but it keeps you up to date on what people are producing and putting out there.
It's family, right? They become family.
Yeah. You become part of this tight knit group of professional sommeliers or bartenders and all that kind of stuff. And they're just all great and kind people that again, if you never tried, you never would have met, you know?
So from that, you graduated Johnson & Wales, you ended up going into the Modern. In the Modern, something transpired. They were opening up a new concept restaurant, somebody who was working at the Modern.
So basically, when I was working at the Modern, and those kind of establishments, you need to start at the bottom, right? So you start running food. So I worked my way through that. Within the year, I ended up bartending, stayed there for about three quarters of a year. When I heard of this opportunity to open Manhattan, which is another Danny Meyer restaurant,
down in the financial district.
Yeah. Down in Fidei.
It's outstanding. It's all the way up on the 60th floor.
Yeah. The views are phenomenal.
Killer. If you can ever go, it's killer. And the bartenders back there, you're all amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible to work with them, to open and see a restaurant start to a finished product is exhausting, but amazing.
Yeah.
It really is something to be in awe of.
Now, is that where you started doing purchasing and buying and
No, that was actually at the Modern.
Oh, you started that at the Modern.
Yeah, so when I took on bartending there, a couple of weeks in, my mentor at the time and boss, Greg Wasserman, basically gave me the program. And I actually wasn't a bartender, come to memory, at the time. I was a bar back and a server. And I was doing this to kind of push myself to become a bartender and understand the purchasing and understanding why these beers work at different times and what kind of collection of these ideas you need. So that's when I got into beer purchasing and sampling and going to these different breweries and having conversations with the brewers, and they took me on tours and that kind of stuff. But back in Manhattan, I did eventually create more of the knowledge aspect. So I wasn't per se ordering there, but I was making the tech sheets to teach our people inside the restaurant to understand the beers that we're serving and understanding why we have them and kind of the rationale behind that.
So why do you have them? Why are there so many different ones?
I mean, there's so many different people. It's as easy as that. And then you have some classics. So you want an East Coast IPA, you want a West Coast IPA, you want to show what we produce in the United States.
And there's distinction between the East Coast and West Coast IPAs, which is very, very systematic, right?
Well, there's stylistic differences, yeah. So like the East Coast IPAs, they're going to be a little bit lighter, but they're going to have a lot more of a fruit presence to them, mm-hmm. where the West Coast may have more of that like piney dankness to them from all the hops that are used.
Are they hoppier, the California ones?
They are hoppier, yeah. Oh.
Is that as a result of the climate? Or is it a choice?
Brewing styles, yeah.
So West Coast is more hoppy.
Hoppy, yes.
Yeah.
They're more hoppy, and basically you want to get a diversified portfolio, if you will, of beers.
Yeah.
So the same way you'd think about stocks. You want to create something for the person who likes sours. You want to create someone for the person that likes porters, and like seasonally they'll change. Maybe I'll have more porters and stouts in the winter, or I'll have more sours and like fresher, lighter IPAs in the summer.
Right.
Because
it's similar to spirits, because you do that as a sommelier too. You do beer, you do spirits, which is liquor, and you do wines.
Yeah. And my time as a bartender as well has like taught me tons about that.
And cigars too, right?
Cigars used to be a part of the program, but no longer part of sommelier. It's not a requirement because smoking has taken such a decline in kind of the U.S.
Gotcha.
So it's not necessarily part of it anymore.
Understood. It's really interesting when you start diving into it, all the differences and trying them and what sends you. It's very similar, like I was saying, to spirits, whereas in the winter, it's like heavier things like scotch and bourbon. And in the summer, more like a rum, a light rum or tequila, vodka, gin. Well, tequila is good all year round.
You definitely see that change at a certain point. People will go from ordering I don't know, old fashions to gin and tonics, because it just, it's lighter, it's fresher, cooler. It's refreshing. Yeah. And so you analyze a cocktail list the same way you do the beer. You want to have cocktails for the person who wants something sweet, something sour, something savory, so on and so forth. And then they seasonally shift.
How do you do that too? Would you make recommendations? Because I know I hear when I'm sitting at the bar and you're working behind it, I'll hear people say, what do you recommend?
Yeah.
How do you come up with that? Because I notice you start pelting them with questions gently, but
because you need to learn what the person likes. Mm-hmm. And until you do that, it's you can't just like be like, you're going to love a Moscow Mule. Without asking these questions, you don't know. So you want to ask something like spirit and refreshing, spirit and stirred. Forward and stirred, or light and refreshing.
Gotcha.
And basically, those are your first fundamental questions. And then from there, you kind of beret them with a couple different to find a path.
Understood. Well, you are listening to Nicholas James Kasdia. He is a certified sommelier. We're going to come back. He's going to talk about some recipes that you can put together as we're hanging out at home and going into this really beautiful season. And we'll talk more about what's in the future for him and all the discoveries that are coming along with that. So stay with us. We will be right back. Healthy Lifestyle with Lorianne is brought to you by Northwell Health. Visit them online at northwell.edu. Well, welcome back to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lorianne. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to hear more about, please email us at healthylifestylewithla@gmail.com. And of course, follow us on social media at Healthy Lifestyle with LA. We love hearing from you. And we answer every email and question and look forward to some additional requests. Actually, the last couple of shows were based on requests that we had received. So we thank you very much for that. So back to you, Nicholas James.
Hi.
So certified sommelier, went and worked at the Modern, then went over, worked at Manhattan.
Yep.
Got a lot of experience there. What happened from there?
From there, I stayed at Manhattan for about 2 years and heard inklings of another project that was going on.
You really do like startups, don't you?
Yeah, the lunatic in me really likes, I guess, pain. So I went to help start Wine Spectator's restaurant. So it's called the Tavern by WS, in which we basically are built all about wine. And I was still bartending there at the time. But the exposure of things that I saw wine related were unlike any other.
Yeah. And you worked for someone that you had met and worked for at the Modern?
Yeah. So yeah. Michael Engelman, definitely one of my idols.
Outstanding.
He is from Austria. He's a master sommelier. So that's the fourth level in which I was talking about the certification.
Highest
before.
Level.
Yeah. And he passed all his tests on the first try.
Oh my God. That's almost unheard of.
It's like very, very difficult to do. And he's just such a talented person. He'll tell the story of how he got into becoming a sommelier, and or not even sommelier, just wanting to learn more about wine. He was asked a question tableside at a 3 Michelin star restaurant in France, and he didn't know the answer, and it drove him crazy. And then he went and just hammered into to wine and never wanted to not know the answer to a question.
It's inspiring.
Yeah.
He's a really nice human too.
Oh my God.
Nice
he's a
person.
Fantastic human being.
Yeah.
He's a great person to show you what you need to do to get to where you need to go.
And also then from there, didn't you transverse after you kind of helped them with their opening? You went over to another bar?
Yeah. So I finally broke into the sommelier area because in New York City, there's a lot of us. So sometimes it's a little difficult. So I'm a sommelier at Aldo Sam Bar now. And Aldo Sam is, he won World's Best Sommelier. I forget in which what year, but
very impressive.
It's very impressive, and he doesn't have any of the certifications, which I find more impressive because
wow.
He's just self-made. He doesn't do certifications. He just knows about wine and just cares about wine. And I think that in today's climate, that's something that's super respectable because it's hard to break into that door without having those things.
Now, Aldo Sam, that's the bar, but it's associated with a
three Michelin star restaurant, La Bernadette.
La Bernadette, yeah.
Yeah, so we're right across the street.
Yeah. And that's another outstanding restaurant. There's so many really good restaurants out there in New York City, but this is a really, really nice one that I enjoyed. And the bar is just so quaint, so nice. And the staff, again, outstanding.
Yeah, super kind people and super knowledgeable. It's a great, where I'm at Aldo Sam is kind of thought as a breeding ground for young sommeliers, which is the perfect place to be.
Now, I know we're talking sommeliers and that's usually associated with wine bars and things like that. However, you do make a mean Negroni.
I do make a decent Negroni. Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
It's gin based, right?
It is gin based. So Negronis have a really cool history, actually. So Negroni started out in Italy, but it started with a cocktail called an Americano. So an Americano was a much lighter cocktail. So it was sparkling water, it was sweet vermouth, and Campari. So bitter, a little bit of sweetness, and just really light and bubbly, right? And then there was this gentleman, Count Negroni, actually. And of course, it's... alcohol is involved in these stories, and they go back pretty far, so who knows how truthful they really are. But nevertheless, it's still a great story. And so Count Negroni was having an awful time. He was in a bad mood. He was with his wife, and he needed something stronger. So he went over to the bartender, and he was like, I need something stronger. Can you make me one of these, but with gin, and put it in a shorter glass, so I know the difference, and put a lemon, an orange twist in it. So he went over and got that, and that's basically this how Negroni started, right?
That's really interesting.
So it all has to do with, I guess, wives sometimes.
Yeah. All right, pipe down, you know. So you know, you have stirred drinks at home and stuff like that. Why is ice important?
Ice is super important. So when it comes to ice, you need to really utilize it when you're diluting. A lot of people have different methods in which making Negronis, right? There's one bartender who basically coined the Negroni in a glass. So you start the Negroni in the glass and you stir it maybe once or twice and you let it sit, because a Negroni should have an evolution to it. It should start off a little too astringent, a little too bitter, a little too alcoholic, right? And then throughout sitting there and talking and having conversations and stirring it with your orange peel, it slowly dilutes to get to this perfect balance of cocktail. Now, if you let it sit even longer, it just dilutes more and it becomes kind of like orange water.
Right.
but it's definitely a drink that needs to have a start and a finish to it. You can also make it so when you're stirring it at home, in whatever you have, you can kind of use a spoon and a glass.
Doesn't matter,
if you really
right?
want.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're at home, who cares?
Yeah, you don't need those fancy
spoons. As long as you get the final product in that glass, that's all that matters.
Like how you think. So there are different variations on Negronis, right?
Yeah. So like I was saying, the Americano. So that's the start. And then in Italy, a bartender was making a cocktail, an Americano. And instead of grabbing sparkling water bottle, he accidentally grabbed the champagne or the sparkling wine or Prosecco or whatever he was using at the time. And he grabbed the bottle, poured it in instead of the club soda. And we invented another cocktail called the Spagliato, which in Italian means mistake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a cute little story there. So
Michael, our producer, is shaking his head. Yes, Spagliato.
Yeah, no, they're delicious. And like, it's a little more boozy, but it's nice. And then over the years, different bartenders created different evolutions, such as the Boulevardier, which you take out the gin, you put in bourbon. So for your bourbon drinkers, and you still want Campari, which is an orange liqueur, and sweet vermouth, you can have a more balanced cocktail for you.
So if I wanted to make, because here comes the recipe, I wanted to make a Negroni, what would I need and what's the best way to do it?
Cool, yeah. So, I mean, everybody has a sweet vermouth preference. Personally, I like Cocchi de Torino. It's one of my favorites. Campari Antica is another great one. But it's all up to the person, right? So right. That's your sweet vermouth. And then you go into your Campari, which there's multiple types, but the Trusted Campari is always a great one. Mm-hmm. And then your spirit. So you can do it with bourbon. You can make a sherry Negroni instead, which is a lower ABV, nutty and delicious. But the recipe is super simple. So it's an ounce of the Campari, it's an ounce of the sweet vermouth, and then it's an ounce of whatever spirit you end up using. And, whatever garnish you want. So you can end up making a Boulevardier, use an orange peel, or maybe you want to feel fancy, use a lemon peel. When you spray these and spritz the oils on the cocktail.
Well, what you mean by that is you twist it so it like spritzes?
Yeah, you kind of take the skin side out towards the drink and you kind of push it so it's shooting the oils, the essential oils, into the drink, which completely changes the cocktail. So it's an easy one-to-one-to-one, and as bartenders, we call it one-to-one-to-one-to-one, so four, because the last ounce should be water.
Okay.
So that's the dilution aspect of it.
Is the water including the ice, or is it literally water?
No, the water's from the ice. Okay. So that's the dilution of the ice. So you're not going to add additional water or anything like that.
Right, right. So we'll include that recipe. So you'll be able to find it associated with this when you look for it. We'll put it on our site. As well, any other versions of this that Nicholas, you can think of that we can put up there?
I mean, the white Negroni is cool as well.
Well, what's the white Negroni?
White Negroni is a little off the beaten path. It's still has gin in it, but then we take out the different aspects. So basically you have a vermouth, a spirit, and a bittering agent in a Negroni. So this has Suze, gin, and Lillet Blanc. So Suze is this almost alpiney grapefruity liqueur.
That sounds yummy.
And then Lillet Blanc is a Blanc vermouth.
Okay.
So it has more like white flower notes to it. Think of like chamomile, but like on steroids.
Ooh, you can make that when we go home.
Yeah. with that, I would use a grapefruit peel because it kind of brings out the essence of that cocktail. So you're trying to match and pair all the flavors and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah, I never knew there were so many variations on one drink. So it's exciting. Yeah. And I love it when you get creative and you start putting things together. So one thing I do notice about you, and this is, I can't say this about every bartender, but I do notice this about you, and I think it's pragmatic of you, is that you're very consistent with flavors on a specific drink.
Well, yeah.
How do you get to that?
As bartenders, we're trained to straw taste. So as we're making your cocktail, you may see a bartender take a straw, put it in the mixing glass, and taste it. And we're not trying to get boozy. We're not trying to get drunk.
Right.
We're just trying to see where the flavor's at. And you find this harmonious balance in which you start to understand how much time you need to stir something for it to get the proper dilution. And over time, the more and more you understand that, the less you need to straw taste. But even to this day, I'll straw taste because you need
consistent.
To know where it is.
Yeah, very, very consistent with your drink.
Yeah, that's what it's about, consistency. And as a bartender, that's what you should really be focusing on.
That you strive for that, don't you?
Well, that's kind of your base level. If you can't bring consistency, why should you be making your own cocktails? You know, you need to understand the classics. You need to understand where they need to be at. And then from there, you can start to understand all of the liquors you're dealing with. Like we have an armada of different liquors and things that you can make cocktails out of. And without understanding what certain ones do, you may lack harmony in cocktails and lack the consistency without getting that baseline.
Yeah. Another time when we're going to have you back, we want to talk about pairing drinks and cocktails and wine and beer with food, but that'll be another show. Right now, you know, what's in your future? What are you seeing?
Right now, it's a weird state for all of us. It's definitely a weird time. But I see in my future a brewing company.
Well, it's a good opportunity right now to change directions, don't you think?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good time to start to invest in yourself.
Totally agree. And I believe in investing in yourself. That's why I'm a mentor.
Yeah, there you
go. Invest in yourself.
So I'm starting up a brewing company by the name of Gallivant Brewing Co. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically just trying to go out east and make beer and have a party in a restaurant basically all the time. And
it's, bring all those tools that you've learned
exactly,
over throughout the years.
And make this beer. And then the great thing about beer is it's the base for a lot of spirits as well. So you can create vodkas and bourbons and do all that kind of stuff.
How do you do that? You've said this before, you transverse it from being beer. What do you use from the beer to get to the vodka?
Well, you use the beer.
Really?
Well, in a sense. So you wouldn't per se use that beer for vodka, but you may use that beer for whiskey.
Got it.
So the base of everything, you're basically making a fermented beverage and then you're distilling it. Mm-hmm. So once that ferments and distills, then you have your vodka. So distillation basically takes out the color and all of the impurities out of it and creates you with the vodka.
It's so funny when you say distillation, all I think of is wine and then grappa, because you distill
the leftovers,
and the leftover grapes. And you get grappa, which is like gasoline.
Exactly.
I love it. The flavored ones are outstanding.
They're amazing.
Very funny story though, when we were in Italy you tried grappa the first time.
You lunatic gave it to me as a shot.
Well, I didn't intend you to take it as a shot. You were supposed to sip
this.
It. Like I was sipping my what was it called? Limoncello.
It was in a shot glass.
So lunatic here, Michael, this is a true story. Lunatic here shoots it back and I'm like, wait, no. And it was too late. It was so funny.
I was drunk within like 30 seconds.
It was amazing. You saw his face. It was like his eyes got big. His throat was on fire and we're walking down the cobblestone street. Well, I should say I was walking down the cobblestone street.
I was stumbling.
He was like a rubber band. I've never seen anything like it.
Like 19 at the time?
Something like that. It was just so very funny. So I was sipping my limoncello and I turn around and I'm watching him just shoot it and I couldn't stop you. That was really very funny. So I don't think you'll do that again.
No, I will never do that. I don't recommend it to anyone. Never shoot grappa if you don't have to.
true story. Always sip first before you shoot. I think that's a good learning lesson. What do you think?
I disagree. Sometimes you don't want to taste how bad it's going to be when you shoot it back.
If it tastes that bad, you probably shouldn't be doing that. So what's your why? Why do you do what you do?
Why do I do what I do?
No, that's my question. You can't have that question.
Well, I can repeat it. I love interacting with people. I love beverage as industry as a whole. I mean, it's you're creating, and in a certain way, you can take it as art. You know, you're creating this beer from nothing. You're taking grain and you're fermenting it. You're making it your own. And same with cocktails. You're making these elaborate balanced things and it's becoming a project of yours. It's becoming part of you. And you basically give yourself to the people you serve.
How fulfilling is that?
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the people's face when they're drinking this cocktail, if they like it, like you know.
Yeah.
And you know, that's another great thing is like when you're serving people wine, like, you know, you pour them the first taste and like, do you like it? Some people will show you that they don't.
Yeah.
And they won't say that they don't like it.
Well, they don't want to insult you.
But that's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Is because we as beverage industry professionals, we want to make sure you're enjoying what you like, or else we're not doing our job properly.
Right.
And I know it's super, you don't want to feel bad. You don't want to like feel like you're imposing. And
yeah,
I
wouldn't
want
to insult, you know, the person doing
it. And you know
what?
It's not insulting. That's what we're there for. That's our job, is to define this harmonious balance of what you like.
Yeah.
And if I pour you something and it's too sweet, say it's too sweet. If it's too like floral, you know, you got to tell us. And that's part of the main thing when it comes to the guest or the consumer, is letting us know.
That's where that relationship building thing comes into play, and where when you see people over and over again, you get better at getting the drink specific for them because you know what they like.
Well, yeah, you get to a point where you don't even have to ask them anymore.
Yeah.
You can see them walk through the door, and I had a regular, his name is Ransley, and he walks in the door, I'm already making a Vesper Martini. I'm ready. He sits down, and it'll be cold. It'll be ready and done.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you get to that level and you have bartenders that do that, or you're a somm and you know what you're pouring for this person already, that's, it makes you feel like you're at home. And that's kind of what we're always going for, is making people feel at home.
Yeah.
And that's what I really want to do with this brewery too, is like have a space in which you can come and be there every day, or you can come and be there on a like special occasion.
Right.
But you don't have to, you know, go all out.
But it's an experience.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an experience. It's a family. It's a friendship. It's you feel like you're part of it, you know?
Yeah. That's why, you know, we say this all the time on Healthy Lifestyle, and by we, I mean me, is that we're here to do two things. We're here to learn and we're here to serve other people.
Yeah.
And that's what you do naturally through your business. And that's why I love working with people who are in the service industry.
Yeah.
Whatever that industry is, as long as you're serving other people, it's a good thing. And it makes you feel good, right?
For sure.
Especially if you're having a bad day. Doesn't it make you feel good when you make somebody else feel better
honestly,
that day?
It's in a certain way, it's a little selfish. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
I will go out of my way if I walk in and I'm like drowsy and I'm having a bad day because we work such long hours sometimes that we're just exhausted, but you take care of that first guest and you just make their night and you all of a sudden just have energy again. You get that second wind because of the people you're taking care of.
Yeah. It's a great fulfilling, and they pay you.
And they pay me to do it. Yeah. It's great.
And you get paid to do it. So that's always the bonus.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing. So it's Gallimont Brewing Company.
Yep.
And if somebody wanted to reach out to you, you're on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. So it's, at @Nick_Kasdia, Kasdia is the last name, and Nick spelled N-I-C-K.
Yes.
You can reach out to me there or email me at the same nickkasdia@gmail.com.
Yeah.
If you ever want any questions about cocktails or if you have any ideas about wine or so on and so forth, I'm always happy to answer.
Want some guidance?
Or if you're looking to break into the industry, please reach out.
Yeah, you're really good about helping other people get in the industry. And you also know a lot about a lot of restaurants. So if you want a nice place to go, just give Nick a ring.
Yeah.
Reach out and he'll, doesn't matter where it is, he has some really good reference points. So I love the people that you work with. They're always, no matter where you've been, they've always been so kind, so wonderful. And
they're
still in your life no matter where you move to. So it's just
you really
amazing.
Form a family.
Nick, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Well, thank you all for joining us today on Healthy Lifestyle. My heart is always lifted by sharing this time with you. Again, want to thank my guest, Nicholas Kasdia. Always want to thank my producer, Michael. You are the bomb. So we are here to serve one another. So take a moment, step out of your day, do a little something for someone else. It's real important, especially since we're finding a shift and a challenge in the world right now. So you want to step out of your day, help somebody else. It'll make you feel better. Just like Nicholas says, there's a warming feeling for serving others. In the meantime, thank you for joining us here on Healthy Lifestyle with Lorianne. I am Lorianne Kasdia. Until next time, play a higher role, serve a higher purpose, show up for you, and show up big.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting, management, or its sponsors.